It's Mike Shope.
Name any word in less than a second, I will tell you how many letters are in it. But I cannot do anything mechanically. I don't even know how to put a game together for three-year-olds.
And the Bulldog.
Fool me once, shame on you. If fool me, we can't get fooled again.
On WGR, Sports Radio 550.
DeChambeau is really hot. I bet they got him. Somebody called something in. A problem you and I as rec golfers do not have to deal with. Matt Collar and I were speaking the other day on his Purple Insider podcast, and he asked me, I mean, this is a guy, Matt, that I really like and have known a long time. He asked me, hey, just before you go, if I am not sure that that ball is my ball, can I pick it up and look at it to make sure? Like, no. Unless you just want to play to have fun, which is most people, then fine, do whatever you want. Throw the ball down the fairway. But there's only two lanes here. Either you're playing by the rules to the best extent that you know them and, you know, mean to, or then you're just not. And he's like, well, okay, I want to play by the rules, although I will ground my club in bunkers. Like, ground your club in bunkers? You can't do what you think is right out there. Matt, you, everybody, do what you think is right. Mike Dempsey, with me now on the West Shore Hotline. You're a golfer, right, Mike?
Oh, yeah.
How do you feel about rules on the golf course? Are you a stickler? Are you casual? How do you go about it?
I mean, it depends on how everybody's playing, man. I'm not like, you know, if you're playing in a tournament, you play by the rules. If everyone's, you know, playing, roll it in the fairway, as long as everybody's happy, man, I don't really care. You know what I mean? As far as like identifying your ball, how can you not identify your ball if it's in the rough? I'm not saying pick it up and flip it around, but aren't like you're allowed to tilt it to see if that's your logo or your mark on it, aren't you?
I don't know. I know there's one.
You are.
There's one pro player that I was, maybe it was during the U.S. Open, and his ball was all marked up with red and blue dots. One of the announcers said, it looks like he got his golf balls at Party City. And so I told Matt, like, if you need to, just draw a line on it or something like that. But it doesn't sound like you're playing that seriously to even have to worry about it. So,
yeah, I don't know. To each your own, man.
Right.
I'm not sweating. And I'm not making any money. I'm not gambling. Generally. So, and if I am, we're all playing under the same ground rules.
Thank you for joining me, Mike. Football diehards, 1010 XL in Jacksonville. Jacksonville, I think you might agree, one of the more interesting teams in fantasy football this year and in football in general. There are just maybe more questions about, at least here on the outside, I think it would be true, about some of their skill position players than maybe any other team has. With the wide receivers and what the backfield breakdown will look like and other things. Has it been a fun team to talk about in that sort of context?
Yeah, I mean, I think we've talked it out. I mean, my training camp, please get here. But, you know, yes, in terms of if you like a little bit of mystery. I mean, we're talking about it today. We did a little poll on the show today. Who's going to lead the team in receiving yards, and it ended up being Parker Washington who won the poll, which I tend to agree with on yards. But, you know, I saw the reason I brought it up is because there was a post on one of the major sites today about ranking all the number two wide receivers. Might have been SI, I think, that had it. Each team's number two wide receiver. And they determined that Parker Washington is no better than the third receiver on the team, you know, despite the fact that he led the team in receiving last year. They ranked Jacoby Myers as the number two on the team. In fantasy, I'd rather, you know, it's kind of how you built your team. If you have a lot of high floor, high catch guys, I'm more willing to take the shot on Brian Thomas. And if you've got some of that volatility, if you've got like Jameson Williams and some of these other guys, maybe Christian Watson, what have you, then maybe you want Parker Washington for a little bit more stability. But I think those guys, not a whole lot separating them in terms of value this year.
So I guess in these polls, Thomas is considered the number one.
As for that, they listed that Brian Thomas was the number one, which I think is interesting.
Yeah.
You know, as well. I mean, that's really here's the thing. If they didn't need him on defense, I think Travis Hunter is the most talented wide receiver they have on the team. So they really do have a good four deep. They just don't have like a top two like Jamar Chase and T. Higgins. But, you know, in terms of spreading the ball around, which points to the value in fantasy on this team is Trevor Lawrence. That's the guy you want to have this year.
I like that idea. I've been in drafts where Brian Thomas Jr. and Parker Washington go literally one after the other. Like it's,
I have as well.
You know, really, really interesting. So Washington, it sounds by how you're talking that Washington has, you know, he's legitimate, that he showed enough, even if it was really just down the stretch last year where he came on. I mean, what was it that I heard the other night? 17 catches through 10 games or something like that. And then bam, down the stretch. And even in the playoff game, which he left and then went back into and caught a touchdown pass against the Bills. It, for you, is he like solid as a good NFL receiver?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you've probably seen the stat going around that other than Puka Nacua, George Pickens, and Michael Wilson Jr., no player in the NFL, no receiver in the NFL had more contested catches. This guy's 5'10", right? But he's built like a tank. And he can high point the ball. He's excellent in the open field because he's a punt returner. On top of that, you know, I absolutely think he's legit. I will not at all be surprised if we hear a contract extension announced before the Jags open training camp on July 29th.
How about Brian Thomas? So to what extent do you think an injury held him back last year? Or was it more than that?
I think that's somewhat in there. I think it was... just, you know, excuses had kind of been made for him in the offseason, right? Like his rookie season, like, we don't quite see it yet. And then they had a joint practice with the Tampa Bay Bucks in training camp, and the Bucks players came away like, wow, you guys have something. And he hit some big plays that day, and then he was off to the races. Well, last year it was like, it doesn't matter. He's not starting fast. Because remember, he did this in his rookie year. Well, he carried it into the season. He had a ton of drops. I mean, that really was it. The timing, the confidence, I don't know what it was between he and Trevor Lawrence wasn't there. And Liam Cohen's not playing around. You know, I mean, this is a new team and he's trying to set the tone. Well, it's completely changed this offseason. There, you will not find anyone who covers a team that doesn't think Brian Thomas was the positive story of the offseason to this point. His chemistry with Trevor looks phenomenal. He's catching everything thrown his way. So, you know, sometimes guys, I don't know if he got a little complacent. I can't say that he did, but something was off last year. And, you know, keep in mind, he had a really good friend from his college days pass away as well, and that could have affected him mentally last year. Again, I don't know him like that to say, but I've seen that speculation. I know this. He's the most talented receiver that they have, and if anyone's going to put together a monster season, he would be the one.
Interesting. And then there's Hunter. Well, I guess there's Myers next. Is there any reason to see him as anything other than what he's been over his career, which is good? I mean, it's useful in fantasy, but, you know, sort of a high floor option.
Yeah, that's probably what he is. I mean, he had a ton of targets. He led the team in targets when he came over. You know, people, I don't think, would realize that, but he doesn't hit the explosive plays. But he is shorthanded. Trevor Lawrence trusts him. So, you know, and where he goes, he's like a, kind of a mid to low end wide receiver four. I mean, that's the thing. You're paying up a little bit for Thomas and Washington. And, you know, Jacoby, you get at a discount, but he's the kind of guy that you don't want in your fantasy starting lineup on a regular basis. But in a pinch, yeah, he's fine. But, yeah, I think that pretty well describes him. Like, he is the guy we've always seen him be.
In a bye week situation, maybe, something like that.
Yeah, something like that, sure.
How about Hunter? No doubt, everywhere you go in the media, somebody asks you a Travis Hunter question, like what to expect. As much of a dilemma as these other names might be, here's one where... You know, they say better in best ball, right? Maybe you get enough offense from him and there are spike weeks and you can sort of pay off the bet based on where you drafted him. But in a redraft league where you're setting lineups, what a headache.
Yeah, I took him, what was it, about 2 weeks ago. I took him with my 15th round selection in a redraft. Mm-hmm. And my thinking was, well, out of all the guys who are available – none of them are as talented as he is at that point. And who knows what happens in training camp? You might have an injury, you know? So if you're drafting now, I think you take a late round flyer on Hunter, but I think if you get into training camp, it's going to become evident he's going to play defense full time or as close to full time as he can. And James Gladstone, the GM, kind of pointed to this in the offseason. He said, look at the depth chart. Where do you think we need him more this year? And it's pretty obvious that, you know, he slots in as their number one corner. And I do think he could be their number one receiver if they let him exclusively focus on that, but that's not going to be the case. So, look, he's too talented not to get the ball to. And he did the first OTA I went out to, and, you know, he's not 100% participating at that point because coming off the LCL injury, but he spent all his time exclusively on offense. You know, so for people who don't think he's going to play offense, they're wrong, but I don't think the consistency is going to be there. You know, best ball, like you said, sure, take a shot on him. Still intriguing in Dynasty, but in a redraft situation, if you're drafting now, yes, because a lot can happen between now and September, but likely if you're drafting a week before the start of the season, he's going to be, you know, just a fun guy to have on your team, but one of the first guys you're going to drop when you need to make a move because you got a couple of injuries.
Yeah, speaking of his talent, I'm looking at the last FFPC redraft league that I drafted, and he was wide receiver picked after Jalen Naylor. So, you know, take your chances. Maybe
right.
What happened last year, Mike? Wasn't there an injury in the secondary, maybe in training camp, and then he was sort of slotted to play more defense, or was that always the plan?
No, last year, Caleb Ransaw was their second draft pick, and he did get hurt in training camp, but he was going to play safety, not corner, and they had Tyson Campbell at that point in time, who they thought was their number one corner, and they had added Jordan Lewis, they had a few other young guys, so the need wasn't as great on defense, and you didn't have Jacoby Myers at the beginning of the year, so they thought it was going to be Brian Thomas, Travis Hunter as their top two guys. And it started to build towards that. If you remember when they played the Rams, a lot of it came in the second half, you know, after they were getting beat, but they had 9 catches for over 100 yards and a touchdown. And it felt like, okay, this is the point they're going to start featuring him. And then he got hurt with a non-contact injury in practice. And, you know, that's the one thing people point to. Well, he's never going to stay healthy trying to play both ways. Well, he wasn't playing both ways. He was playing 2/3 on offense and 1/3 on defense, which made him a full-time player. But it wasn't like he got caught with an incredible workload or he was taking too many hits. It was just a fluke kind of thing. Guys don't generally tear their LCLs, but he did. He's already back running 22 miles an hour. And, you know, he's going to be fine health-wise, I think, barring a setback. And, you know, he's intriguing, but he might always be one of these guys that's just frustrating because the Jags do plan to use him on both sides. So maybe he's never going to get the chance to commit as much to offense as you'd like to see.
With Mike Dempsey, so you've mentioned already how bullish you might be on Lawrence this year. In fantasy drafts, right? In fantasy drafts, he goes in a pack of quarterbacks. Really, everybody's pretty cheap at that position in most drafts I've been in this year. Does Lawrence stand out for you as somebody that is, you know, going too late, so to speak?
That's too late is relative, right? Every draft is different, and some leagues that we're in just wait on the quarterback position forever. But, you know, last year he finished as quarterback 4 in fantasy in terms of total points on the season, and he was really the top quarterback down the stretch from, say, week 12 on, I think. He was number one in fantasy points. He was number one over Matt Stafford, averaging over 27 points a game during that stretch. And that's a stretch where they're, you know, Brian Thomas was struggling. They're acclimating to Jacoby Myers. They did not have Travis Hunter available to them. So I think the upside is tremendous with Trevor. I don't expect him to run for another 9 touchdowns, but I'll put it this way. I'm very content. Now, you won't get this in Jacksonville, but up in Buffalo, you know, let people take the Dak Prescott to the world and all those other guys that are kind of bunched in there. And I think Trevor Lawrence can be every bit as effective. I'm not going to obviously draft him in the Josh Allen or Lamar Jackson or Joe Burrow range, but I think there's a chance that after those guys and maybe Stafford, you know, coming off an MVP season, that Trevor can push for top 5 fantasy relevancy at kind of a top 10 price.
it is interesting how there is a pretty big group of guys there, and it really is kind of a pick your flavor, whether that's Prescott. Jalen Hurts can go in the ninth round. Jaden Daniels even can go in the ninth round. And then you have
May,
yeah, Caleb Williams. Herbert is hot this year. Like, there are a lot of ways you can play it. I tend to just play it based on who my receivers are, and maybe I can find a stack there, which, you know, Jacksonville is certainly playable in that way too. How about the running backs? Another really tough one around fantasy, Mike, to try to figure out what the plan is there.
Well, I think you have to assume that Bajal Tootin will be most valuable, but will he be five rounds more valuable than Chris Rodriguez? It's tough to know. You know, Bajal Tootin in limited touches scored seven times last year. You know, people have asked, well, how do they replace Travis Etienne? Well, maybe Bajal Tootin just, you know, doubles his output. That's very possible, but they only brought in one free agent of note this year, and that was Chris Rodriguez, and he has a familiarity with Liam Cohen, having played for him for a year at Kentucky. And, you know, they said despite the productivity they got, you know, when you look at some of the raw numbers, there was a stink in the running game. They couldn't run the ball down, let's say, the last 6 weeks when teams knew they wanted to, on third and one, fourth and one, things like that. And Chris Rodriguez is brought in to do that. Well, where do you got a lot of third and ones? At the goal line, right? So if he becomes the primary goal line back, he's going to be a thorn in Tootin's side. I'll say this, like, Tootin's growing on me at the fifth round price. I wouldn't pay anything higher than that. But equally, if I miss out on him, I'll take a swing on Chris Rodriguez in round 10. And I think, you know, you won't get the same upside, but you're not paying the same price. So I think if you're drafting in those kind of ranges, I'd ideally like to get Tootin in round 6, but it's becoming more and more difficult to do that. And I do think if there was one guy that was going to go for 1,200 yards and 10 or more touchdowns, it's overwhelmingly likely to be Bajal Tootin.
I don't know that you and I talked after the playoff meeting between the Jaguars and the Bills, but I do remember watching it thinking, we're in trouble if they keep giving the ball to that guy. Like, Tootin had a couple
and they
of
didn't.
And they didn't. Yeah,
they didn't give it to him in the second half at all.
I think
crazy.
The Bills were really lucky that they just, I don't know, they didn't really turn to him at all, like you said. So Bills got away with one there.
Yeah, well, it's interesting. My co-host in Jacksonville, Tony Smith, he brought this up going a while back, and people are saying, you know, we need more pass rush because we've gotten to Josh Allen one time. And Tony's point was, well, if somebody throws a block and Trevor Lawrence converts that fourth and two, then it might be a moot point, you know, and it's true, which kind of feeds into why they went with the tight ends in the draft and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, Tootin, just to go back to your central point, 4 carries for 51 yards in that game, man. So that is the lasting impression I think he has left in people's minds, and that's why he's being coveted right now in fantasy.
Really interesting team, the Jaguars. Just in our last few minutes here, Mike, let's talk some more just general fantasy stuff. Almost every draft I'm in, and probably you as well, the top 5 names are the same. It's Gibbs and Robinson at 1 or 2, and then it's 3 receivers, Chase, Nakua, JSN. Who do you like at 106 in a vacuum?
I might like McCaffrey at 103.
Okay.
Honestly, I certainly like him at 106. Like is not a strong enough word. 106. Because I've done a few of these, you know, whether it's best ball or anything else, and I've tried going the JSN route, given the choice. And I just don't like I like the options. I can get McCaffrey and like A.J. Brown. And a lot of times, you know, sometimes you get that start of the second round running back run and you're kind of stuck and you're like, oh, the best value is go wide receiver. Well, this year, that's becoming more and more problematic. I'm not one of these guys that's going to draft a bunch of backups and hope that two of them pop. I want at least to have my anchor running back in there. And look, man, if we knew McCaffrey was going to stay healthy, if we knew everyone was, and we don't know Gibbs and Bijan if they're going to stay healthy. We just don't. But if we knew McCaffrey was, I'd probably take him number 1 overall. I mean, it's the age that drops him down a little bit, but he has been a machine in point per reception leagues. I think he'll continue to be that. As it is now, I'd draft Gibbs number 1 slightly over Bijan, but yeah, I could steam McCaffrey up to 3 very easily.
That point, if you knew he was going to be healthy, We've been saying that for 7 years now, literally, right? Like, just his production is so off the charts. But early, maybe it's been to our benefit. He had that stretch earlier in his career where he got hurt a couple of times. And that scared some drafters away from him, maybe forever. But, I mean, last year, holy cow, what? I mean, 413 touches regular season alone at age 29.
But he is healthy now. Like, you know, there have been years where you're like, oh, he's heading into camp, and he's expected to be healthy by the start of camp or the start of the season. And you're like, okay, and we kind of close our eyes to it. But, you know, he's posting insane workout videos. I don't know, man. I don't know if there's any particular reason. I get the whole workload thing, but, you know, we haven't seen the kind of workload that they're going to put on Jahmyr Gibbs this year. Does he hold up to it? We don't know, you know. But, again, we don't know anybody's going to be healthy. So I understand the inherent risk. And when you're drafting Chase or Puka or JSN, you're getting pretty much a sure thing at wide receiver. So I'm not faulting anybody who doesn't take him. Or if they want to take Amon-Ra St. Brown over him at six, fine, but I would take McCaffrey over Jonathan Taylor, Ashton Jeanty, or any other running back, James Cook, anybody being considered in the first round.
As you mentioned, Cook, how do you feel about the Bills guys? DJ Moore is the big wild card here this year, new to the team from the Bears, presumably Josh Allen's wide receiver one. It doesn't look like there's tons of love for him, even despite that. In drafts I'm in, he's like a sixth-round pick.
Good. I think he's a great value, man. I'm like, I just don't get, I was never a Khalil Shakir drafter. I think we've talked about this before. I think DJ Moore is more talented, and I like it when teams go out and acquire a guy. They did it for a reason, right? I feel like they wanted to tilt the balance of that depth chart up in Buffalo. Now, you're a lot closer. You can correct me if I'm wrong on any of my misconceptions, but I think DJ Moore is a steal this year in fantasy drafts. And, you know, you don't have to draft him as your number one, but if I build my team out with some running backs early, maybe I draft an elite tight end, I can live with DJ Moore as my wide receiver two all day long.
What do you think, last thing, what do you think of the negativity toward him? So we had the excuse that he didn't have good quarterback play for much of his career, but this isn't that. I mean, his numbers dropped off in Chicago. He had some big games late, some big plays late. Does the counter argument to drafting DJ Moore make sense to you?
DJ Moore has played with a lot of hot garbage at quarterback at times over the years. Now, granted, it didn't work out, you know, with Caleb Williams last year, but look, prior to that, he had four 1,000-yard seasons, including a 1,300-yarder, another 966 in there in a six-year span, had 96 and 98 receptions. Luther Burden impacted things. Colston Loveland impacted things. I don't think DJ Moore forgot how to play in one off season. He's still on the right side of 30, although barely. I think DJ Moore is going to be a 1,000-yard receiver this year. I can't, you know, the touchdowns are always a tough thing when Josh Allen and James Cook are hogging them, but he's never been a massive touchdown guy anyway. He's never had more than eight in a season. You've only done that once. So if you're looking for 1,000 yards, six touchdowns, 80 plus catches, and I'll take that all day. If I'm, you know, being patient, you can get DJ Moore just outside the top 24 wide receivers. I expect that kind of production out of him this year.
Very good. Always a pleasure to speak with you, Mike. Thanks for your time.
Likewise, brother. Anytime.
All right. Mike Dempsey, 1010 XL in Jacksonville and football diehards. You can hear him on satellite radio pretty much every weekend over there. How about you on DJ Moore? Are you buying it? 803-0550 if you want in. I'm pretty open here until Brian Koziol walks in at about 5:30. We'll recap day two of the Open Championship, and I'll try during this break here to find out more about what the DeChambeau controversy is all about. They had him out on the fifth hole for like an extra maybe 20 minutes going over what happened on that hole. Might have been one where somebody called in an infraction watching it on TV, and every time I look up, I'm watching the same highlight for like an hour of him, whatever he is accused of doing on that hole. So the latest on that still to come. Mike Shope here. Bulldog is off today. Bills, Sabres, Connor Hellebuck. I'm open for what's on your mind here as we continue on WGR.
Todd Lewis, do you have more on this?
Yeah, Bryce DeChambeau was frustrated when he walked out of scoring, and he said to his camp, they, being rules officials, said, I improved my lie. And from what we understand, it's on the fifth hole, and he said he's going to show them that he did not. We believe he's going to jump in the cart and go back to the fifth hole to show where the possible incident or rules infraction took place. So this is still developing, guys.
You got to love golf for this, right? Or, I mean, you can roll your eyes and still love it. I mean, it is 9:30, as Zach said over there, and the coverage continues. I think it would be over otherwise. The guide says it was supposed to be law and order like an hour ago. They're not showing any golf. There might still be some. One thing that's interesting about this situation is, and Brian made this point with me on Wednesday, how probably because the days are so long there, like 5 a.m. to 10 p.m. sunlight, they don't, as opposed to what the U.S. Open does, put half the golfers on the back nine first. They don't stagger it like that. So everybody plays 1 to 18. And so you get to whatever it was, 8 o'clock or 8:15, nobody's on five anymore. So they just go out there and the officials and DeChambeau and his caddy and whoever else are just out there for maybe 20, 30 minutes talking it all out, trying to work out the situation. You got to love golf for this. DeChambeau is just right now coming in and out of the scorer's tent, media all around it, and they did ding him. They just changed the scoreboard. Two-shot, two-stroke penalty. So he goes to five under, which is tied for fifth. After having been seven under before all of this happened. You got to love golf for it. Like, it's Watergate. One guy walking in the grass, does he stomp on the grass? Does he do something with his club that he's not allowed to do? I have not been able to follow this one that closely. But improve his lie somehow illegally? I guess you can never do that, right? In like a real tournament. You do it all the time. I know it. I've seen you play golf. You do it all the time. Just, you know, just tap the ball ever so slightly. Maybe there's a tiny divot. Maybe there's a speck of dirt. Just, you know, make sure it's fluffed up. I mean, you've got security. You've got fans roped off. There's the officials with walkie-talkies. And it's like somebody just broke into something trying to figure out whether DeChambeau deserves a two-stroke penalty. Well, he got one. So definitely a topic for Brian, who will know all about the situation and what the rules are and how they were enforced here. This is maybe one of those where you or I are watching the broadcast and notice it. And who are you supposed to know to call when you do that? How does this happen where the people that have this, the players that have this happen to them, when somebody watching the Open calls in, like if that's you, who are you calling? Brian? Maybe Brian would be my call. Maybe Brian would know the number to like the Golf Channel or something. Like who is it? Is it still even a phone call? Is it? Maybe, can you go online? If the whole thing had been, maybe it did, played out on Twitter or something, then perhaps that's enough for it to gain visibility and tournament officials find out that there's all this enthusiasm for whether a rule was broken. Also, you have. Now DeChambeau just comes out and they want an interview and he says no. I don't think DeChambeau is doing interviews anyway. They were talking about that on the broadcast today, that instead, maybe not every round, but instead of going to the interview room, which of course today they would want him to do, he goes to his YouTube channel and talks about his round on his YouTube channel. So maybe they'll try to make him after this one, but I don't think they can. So we'll see if he talks. But yeah, I don't know who to call. If I see something, I probably won't even notice it, but if I did, who would I call? Would I call Brian? Would I call, like, a local news station? I wouldn't know how to call the Royal Burke. Well, maybe that's something you could figure out how to do. Call Royal Birkdale. Yes, hi. Big fan. Just wanted to point out something I saw. Is there somebody, like, there who is working for that purpose? Is somebody's job at any of these places, Golf Channel, the golf course itself, is that their job to field calls from viewers who think they've seen something illegal? Anyway, interesting. Golf is unique for this. Can you think of anything like it in another sport where the game is over, the round is complete, it's all over, and then somehow out here we can influence? No, I can't think of anything like it in another sport. I'm actually sort of racking my brain trying to come up with comparisons, and I thought of the Pine Tar game. Has the show ever sounded older than a reference to the Pine Tar game? 1981? Early 80s, Royals-Yankees, George Brett hits the winning homer off the, maybe Gossage, maybe not, off the Yankees to sort of win the game for the Royals, and Billy Martin, the Yankee manager, comes out after Brett has rounded the bases and they're celebrating. Tim McClellan is the umpire, the home plate umpire, and Martin wants to get Brett on the Pine Tar. So they go and get his bat, and everybody kind of looks like they have no idea what's happening. They go and get his bat. They lay it on the field in front of home plate to measure it, because they would know how, I don't know the number, how many inches across home plate is, and maybe the Pine Tar went past the edge of home plate or something, so they knew it was illegal. Kind of a cockamamie rule, but it's a rule. So they call Brett out. You've seen the tirade. He just storms out of the dugout, arms flailing, gets right in McClellan's face. You have a whole big scene, and that might have been the last out. Like that, two outs in the ninth, that might have been the last out of the game. So then there's a whole process where the Royals file an appeal, maybe it would be, and they win. And the home run is overturned. So it's a school day, as I remember it, the day that they resume the game between the Royals and the Yankees, the bottom of the ninth with Kansas City in the lead. And no, I think maybe they had to get, no, of course, because the home run, the Yankees still had to get the third out. And Martin put players at all different weird positions. Like, he was just sort of totally and still in a protest mood about it. Resentful that they had to go back and finish this. So one afternoon, they go back. It's now maybe 5-4 Kansas City, two outs, top of the ninth. The Yankees get the third out. And I think this would have been before the third out, too. Martin has the pitcher appeal to every base, challenging that Brett didn't step on the bases. And I think he was basically like, well, how do you know if he did or didn't? I mean, it was months ago. So that was a charade. And Yankees go down and lose Pine Tar. Uncle Mike with the Pine Tar story today. Hopefully most of it was accurate, just from memory. 803-0550 for your calls. Confirmation of a new alternate Bills uniform today from Bills and Sabres boss Pete Guelli. That's been all the speculation for a long time, if not like the knowledge that there would be another Bills uniform, one we haven't seen before. The one that people that I follow that are really into uniform stuff all seem to think is the one is gray. Jersey and pants, gray, with blue numbers maybe or white numbers. And that's a tough one. We'll see. I'm not always like a curmudgeon when it comes to uniforms. In fact, I think in sports, knock yourself out. Wear different uniforms all the time. Be like Baylor. Wear a different, Oregon, different uniform every week. You know, it's different and interesting. And I'm not, as much as I like a team like, say, the Canadiens, who have had the same uniform for like a century, mostly, as much as I can appreciate that, I also think, you know, it's kind of fun for fans, and it's not that I'm here for this reason, but for teams to make a little money, like new stuff. I mean, I think they can get pretty ugly. That's just, you know, simple taste, right? So I'm not sure I'm going to dig all gray, but I did like the white ones last year, the Winter Soldier look by the Bills. I went to that game and I thought that was pretty hot or cold, but it was also it's not winter yet when they wore that. It was like week 4, week 5 against New England. I like that uniform. I'm not sure. Detroit has an all gray uniform you've seen them wear maybe on Thanksgiving. And to me, like, sure, it's perfectly conceivable that the Lions could have an interesting and cool alternate uniform. All gray for me isn't it. Let's hope we don't get our wires crossed and both teams wear all gray on that opener, that home opener against the Lions. I'm pretty sure that won't happen, but we'll see how it goes over when it comes out. And I have no idea what to expect on a Sabres one. Hopefully not all gray. If it's not too soon, or if not too late to weigh in. So that was made official today. If you want to talk about the Bills or the Sabres, I am here for it. I've been doing a lot of it this week without Bulldog here, and I would be even if he were here, of course. That'll be next week. Connor Hellebuyck is a big topic. Are you open to it? Have you changed your mind on it? Do you think it's impossible or unrealistic or just what at this point? And with the Bills, the overall vibes, the DJ Moore acquisition, and lots of other topics have come up, including this uniform stuff today, over the course of the week. 803-0550, if you want in, this is Mike Shope, back after this timeout here on WGR.